Welcome to the B-side. I can't say it differently, guys. We tried to halfway through that, but I just can't. And welcome to the B-side podcast number 21 of Tawasin Lions Church. It's April 1st. April Fool's Day. This is not an April Fool's joke. There will be a podcast. Well, you can decide at the end of the podcast if this is an April Fool's Day joke.
This podcast
is a joke. I'm going to asterisk. If I say anything controversial, it's
April just a joke.
It's April Fool's in hindsight.
I'm your host, Rhoda Brooks, and with me is Pastor Stephen Croker and Pastor Tyler Crawford.
And we are bringing you all the post-game reaction.
There was a church soccer league on
this
Sunday.
Podcast
breaking developments.
Christian soccer league. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Christians beat Catholics in bloody grass-stained field.
Right? Artificial turf.
Yeah, artificial turf.
By a final score of 3-1.
So when was the game?
Last night.
And was it your first league?
It was a friendly. Although, can a Protestant Catholic game ever be called a friendly?
Wow. And you guys won?
Yeah.
Wow.
3-1.
3-1. I heard that was a tough team in the league. What happened?
We beat them.
Right on. Right. Was that because, you know, you single-handedly beat them? Or
I single-handedly cheered on from the side.
I think it was God.
I went out.
Favor. No. I'm kidding.
The Reformation game.
Yeah.
I play a little bit.
You guys had pictures of Luther on your jersey? Or just 95 Theses nailed, the logos of the 95 Theses nailed to your chest.
And that's when you hope you don't lose and God humbles
you. Yeah. That'd be a good idea.
Oh my goodness. Personally, but you have like the Connor clan.
Yeah.
Maybe you have a lot of good
friends. We do. We have a really good team.
Yeah.
And we also have me. And
yeah. you're just slowly morphing into the chat.
You're praying for
us. I think you did jersey at first, and then like every game they're like, Pastor Steve, will you pray for us? You're just like discipling people, and you're like, you just stop wearing cleats. Like, show up in a suit.
Can you bring the orange slices? Yeah. By the end of the year, I'll be the soccer mom.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what happened to me. I'm starting slow pitch league tonight.
And oh, like, man.
I'm going to play with a bunch of cops. I'm like, I need to.
You're going to be the chaplain of the team.
And, well, they're probably going to need me to be the chaplain, a bunch of pagan cops. No, it's going to be fun. It's my buddy and I intentionally playing in a beer league in Langley. Another pastor friend. And so I'm just trying to say
that. You're going to have some interesting conversations.
That's absolutely
good.
Yeah.
Very good.
How'd those Blue Jays do?
Oh.
Opening day.
Yeah. We're going to have a redo.
At least there's 161 more games.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I was quickly, like, I found it quickly very easy to focus on work. Because I had worked at home in the afternoon without realizing the game was early. And then I came home and I was like, oh, like, I can work and have the game on. Because baseball is probably the best sport to
actually have to watch. Yeah.
And I was just like, well. I just found my productivity inning by inning increasing. Like, by the time it was like 5 o'clock and the game was over, I was like, I got a lot done today. And this game was brutal.
I was at least you benefited from it.
But hopefully they play better in Baltimore next weekend.
Oh, you're
That's when we're going to be there. So.
Well, Wet Paint. I like the title for the sermon. It was a good sermon. I enjoyed it. Thank you. I really thought it was interesting, you know, you're talking about when people say, I'm not worried about that because I'm not that person. It's not possible for me to sin in that way because I'm not like that. Like, they figure they have different areas of weakness. And for me, I know in my own life, that has been one of the worst positions to take. And I think, I don't know, I was just thinking that it's a sign of maturity going, I can't imagine sinning in that way, but I know that I can. And therefore, because if you don't think you can... if you take the position that you don't think it's possible to sin, why would you guard yourself against it? But if you actually believe that it is possible for you to sin in ways that even though you can't imagine, mm-hmm. you will actually attempt to insert wisdom and guard yourself against things. And I don't know why we don't learn this historically from people in our lives, our parents, or like people before us, historically. Biblically, historically, mm-hmm. where I'm sure every time we see someone, I'm sure David didn't think he would sin in the ways that he did, mm-hmm. but he didn't guard against it. And so I don't know why each of us has those moments where we actually feel that we are different than everybody else
yeah.
who has actually found yeah. themselves sinning.
As soon as you think you're above a sin, you are now most susceptible to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. And also your comments on, like, the more you understand grace. Well, for me, I was thinking at the end of it, you know, the maturity of, for me, the more you understand grace, the more sensitive you are to the Holy Spirit, the more convicted you will be. The more, like, when Paul's saying, like, the wretched man that I am. Because he actually, the more you understand about God, the more you understand about yourself. Like, the more clear things, and the more you know that, you understand grace, the more deprived you really find that you are, and in need of a Savior. And that's when grace becomes amazing. Just like, is it John Newton? Yeah, John Newton's Amazing Grace. Which made me really mad to hear that people were changing the lyrics to that song when you mentioned that.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've heard some
recently. So I've always found it fascinating.
Saved a person like me. Saved someone like me, I think is one version.
But I've always found it interesting because it's so... It's one of the clearest gospel songs in my mind, uh-huh. And yet it's one of the most prevalent hymns used in non-Christian settings. Mm-hmm. And it's always kind of blown my mind why they're so drawn to it. Because it's not, like, ambiguous, you know? It's
I've heard one reason is because God is actually not actually mentioned until the fourth verse. If you think about it. And yet it's so deeply gospel-rich.
So leave out the fourth verse, and it's just this, like, concept of grace.
Yeah. By shining as the sun with no escapes.
Yeah.
To sing God's praise.
I think, like, yeah.
That's right. It sounds right.
I also think it's funny because it's a pretty strongly Calvinistic hymn.
Hmm.
Like, the lyrics are pretty deeply reformed, and John Newton was thoroughly reformed in his understanding of salvation. It's just interesting to me. In fact, many of our hymns, because written in that era, 18th, 19th century, the Puritans, the dissenters, the Baptist movement in England were all so heavily reformed in their thinking. You know, Arminianism didn't really rise until America, kind of late 19th, early 20th century. So many of our favorite songs hold a theology that's different than people would hold. I've actually heard there's a really funny R.C. Sproul, who's this Presbyterian Reformed theologian, who wrote a kind of a mocking kind of a parody of the song called Arminian Grace, where he rewrote the lyrics. It actually isn't that. It's not super respectful. It's sort of just a little bit mocking. So I'm not saying I'd stand by it, but it was humorous. He tried to rewrite the song so it'd be more Arminian and less Reformed, just as a joke. Anyway, you can Google that. Or not.
Well, and also you were talking about, like, right now, I think I've mentioned this before, like, I'm a Cambodia teamer reading Counterfeit Gods by Tim Keller. That's a great book. And you were talking in your sermon about deeper motives.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, when you lead to these, let's call them surface sins, that you can say, oh, I need to stop sinning here. But if you don't address the deeper motives of what's going on, it doesn't, well, I don't know, how would you articulate that? If you don't, you can address the surface sin, but if you don't address the deeper motive, then you're not going
to
get very far.
You don't get to the root of it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like putting a Band-Aid on a wound that needs stitches.
Yeah.
It might provide some relief, some...
Doesn't deal with the problem.
But it's not going to deal with the problem.
Yeah, because Tim Keller talks about that in his Counterfeit Gods. He talks about surface idols and deeper idols.
Mm-hmm. What's
and you have these surface idols of things like money and relationships. And what is that knocking noise? Something's going on. If you guys hear banging on podcasts, I don't know what that is. Someone's trapped in the wall.
Sorry, I just throw some drywall.
But anyway, so... But he talks about, like, money and relationships and all stuff, but they're often a symptom of a deeper idol that you could just say, well, I need to spend less here, or I need to do that less. But it is, like, if you don't, they're usually things about power and control and meaning in your life and significance and things like that. And so if you only deal with the surface idol, you're just going to find another surface idol that's going to manifest it without dealing with the deeper issue.
Well, it's classic symptom management, right? Like, it's so... And, I mean, we do that medically all the time. So you have a headache, you throw some aspirin on it. The aspirin doesn't... Or the Tylenol doesn't take your headache away. It doesn't relieve the, it just numbs the pain, or painkillers or whatever. So like you could have a brain tumor and keep popping more and more aspirin and managing the pain and living comfortably, but meanwhile this thing is doing irreparable damage, right? Like it's
Well, we got some good questions that were sent in. Actually, I've got this whole list of like great topics that we could just cover for a while here. But today, we got some good questions. I think you alluded to this one on the last podcast, saying that we'd touch on it. And it was sent in by a listener. And I think this is a question that a lot of people struggle with. And that is, so the particular writer of this is, had explained in their email that in their 20s and 30s, they had a lot of people, either through working with the elderly or in hospitals or in their own family, people that were dealing with illness or passing, and they just happened to be a person that was very comfortable helping people through that time and in that transition or what have you, and then they really came to know the Lord in their 40s. And they're still in this position, whether it be neighbors on their street or just other people they know. They list several of them that are, someone has passed from cancer or someone is dealing with that or another issue. And now, because of their faith in God, they're not totally sure how they feel or how to handle that. So they have good questions in here. Like if someone is passing and they're with a family or a friend who doesn't know the Lord, this person's asking, like, do we talk about God? Do we just sit quietly and support them? If someone does pass and you know that they didn't have faith, like, what do you say to... So the first part of the question is, what if they haven't passed yet? And just dealing with that and supporting them. And what if they've passed and they weren't a believer? And what if they passed and they were a believer? Like, what are the different things you say?
So first, if you're talking to someone who is dying and they're not a believer, what do you do, right? Mm-hmm. I think in all these questions, the important thing, first thing I would say is like, theology shouldn't be your first goal. Like, I have very clear theological convictions on what happens when someone dies and what's going to happen and all that sort of thing. But first, what someone probably needs is love. And encouragement, hug, your presence, stuff like that. So, you know, even at a, you know, funeral or someone's suffering, like I have a great theology of suffering, but when someone finds out tragic news, I don't sit down and unpack my views of suffering. That's probably not what's needed at the time. There's certainly a place for understanding death and suffering and sickness and having a sound theology of all these things. But it's actually not in the time of crisis when those things are important to talk about, not as much in the time of crisis when we're going to sit down and unpack theologically. So I'd say first, like if you've got a neighbor, friend, family member that isn't a believer, just firstly love them, support them, pray for them, help them, just personally be present with them. You don't want to just be the guy who's like preaching at them but has no compassion because they're hurting and they're lonely, they're afraid, and what they need is love. And if you're going to just come at them with like a sermon without any sort of sense of compassion, it's not going to go well. It's going to be hurtful. It's going to make it worse, you know, things like that. So firstly, just like in all these situations where there's death and sickness,
and I'm pretty sure that a non-Christian family, if they knew that you went in and talked about if you don't believe in Jesus you're going to hell, and they found out that you said that to the family member, they're going to kick you out of the house. Like, you know, like, a person, you're scaring them. But I think if you have a relationship with someone and they know what you believe, like, you've had a relationship with someone and you go in and you show Christ's love to them and you support them and you say, can I pray, or I am praying for you, and what can I bring? And and you love on them and you show that to them, if God's, and you are also actively praying for them in their hearts, then God can open up opportunities. But I think you need to be prepared to have those conversations. If the person who is ill says to you, can you talk to me about what you believe, or what do you believe about heaven? And then you can talk about it in love and talk about why, therefore, the gospel is such good news for us.
So I would, I mean, so first is always like just lovingly, right? Compassionate, show care and tenderness, because this is a person who is hurting. You don't want to hurt them more, wound them more. Like, they are raw, perhaps, mm-hmm. you know? And then I would ask them, I think that in our current cultural setup, this is not how it's always been, but we never talk about death. Mm. Like, the famous kind of analysis was, like, in the Victorian age, they obsessed about death and never talked about sex. It was completely taboo. And our culture is the opposite. We're obsessed with sex and never talk about death. We have all these euphemisms, he passed, you know, all these things. We don't talk about it. We pretend it's not going to happen. However, when someone is sick and dying, or when a family member dies for a brief time, a small window, we open up our minds to the reality that death is coming, that we are mortal. It's like we don't believe it. Mm-hmm. But in a brief window, and it's not very big, it's 2 weeks after that funeral of a loved one, that they go back to believing in their mind that they're immortal, that they don't have to deal with death and what comes after. But in that short window, they actually are open to talking about death often, right? So I think there is often increased opportunity to talk about God
and death. I think one of the important things I think to consider is this idea of office. What are the auspices of which you're being included in this person's life? So, like for Steve and I, if we're brought into situations, whether it's can you do a wedding, can you do a funeral, can you do a
visitation,
we're doing it under the office of pastor. And so I always felt very compelled when I've done hospital visitation or weddings or funerals to preach the gospel. To take every opportunity to share Jesus with the people, because it's almost an expectation, maybe unspoken, but under the office of pastor. Now, if you're not a pastor, sometimes it's a bit more murky, but sometimes you may be brought in, as a Christian, like here's someone who has connection to God. And so taking those opportunities to gently and lovingly, like, because part of it is like, I feel like what she's getting at here in this question is a bit of like, how urgent should it be? How urgent should I be to talk about it? And the reality is the answer to that question in broad sense, we should always have more urgency to share the gospel.
Yes.
But like, that's in general. In any circumstance. Because you don't know when anybody's going to go.
But I will say from personal experience, I have a friend who died a number of years ago, probably 10 years ago now, in a car accident that I was really good buddies with in high school. And he asked me about Jesus a number of times in high school, maybe two or three times. Like, this is what you believe, like, and I wasn't really living a life that I wanted to identify that way, and I avoided the topic with him all the time. And then he died, and to this day, I always say, man, like, I had like opportunities mm-hmm. to tell Bob, his name is Bob, about Jesus. And because of my own fear or insecurity or sinful heart, I chose. Now, it's not on me that if Bob's not in heaven or not. I don't know where he ended his life with the Lord because we'd lost touch. But I don't feel like that's on me. But I feel like I'm going to have to account for that at the end of the day. Like, and so I regret that. Like, I really go back and go, like, man, I wish I would have shared Jesus with this guy.
But you're also talking, I mean, I totally agree with you. If you have the office, then that is helpful. And I think that we need to always be ready to give an account. So if you are visiting with families and they know you're a Christian and they start asking about it, I think you need to be willing to have those conversations and not avoid them, like
yeah.
you're saying.
Yeah.
But I also believe that, like you were saying, there needs to be sensitivity. You can't just go in preaching because you're right and they're just ignorant. Mm-hmm. But you need to be loving to them. But you said that Bob asked you. Yeah. You could also be in a situation where nobody's asking you.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I would say something like, if someone's dying or sick, you know, you're asking them how they're feeling. Are you anxious? What do you think about? And I would ask them, like, have you thought about death and life to come? What do you believe about that? And just mm-hmm. see what they say. And then if they share, maybe they don't know and they haven't thought about it, or maybe they have a view, and then say, I mean, just because I love you, and I don't want to be judgmental, but can I share with you what I believe and what I've learned from the scriptures about life and death, and that there is a life to come and we're going to be accountable for what we live, but none of us can really be rightfully called good people that deserve God's blessing and deserve heaven, but it's by Jesus that and you can just so I'd ask them what they think and kind of sensitively ask them, where's their heart at? What have they been thinking about? Have you been thinking about life after death and what's to come? And if they have or if they haven't, just kind of start by listening and then take that up. Can I share with you what I think and what I've learned from the church? And I think often, sometimes people, as they get sick and are nearing death, they will get more and more closed and hardened. Mm-hmm. But I think often people are suddenly open to anything, mm-hmm. because they there's this loss of control, and they're willing to kind of receive wisdom or knowledge or love or anything. Like, they're just kind of whatever works, and they're just open, mm-hmm. and they might be more receptive. Now, some people are going to be less receptive because they're bitter and angry and closed, and other people might be more. So it's different, but that's what I would do. Yeah. I would ask it that way.
Yeah. Well, I know, and one of my close non-Christian friends that was brought in my life in the last number of years, I mean, she knows that I love Jesus. We've had lots of great conversations about Jesus, and I know that if she was going through something like that, we would be able to have those conversations because I have a relationship with her.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be out of the blue. They wouldn't be coming out of left field, right?
Yeah.
So I know that I could have those conversations with her. Her dad came down with pancreatic cancer a couple of years ago, and I didn't have the same relationship with her dad. So now it's like one removed.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to say, would you like me to go share Jesus? Like, I just made sure that she knew I was available. Like, what do you need? Do you need help with your dad? Do you need help with you? And then because it was one removed, I remember I asked you about this before, but I just put to her, I said, you know, if your dad is having thought, it wasn't thoughts in his head, but you know, like if he's dealing with stuff and he would like to speak with a pastor, Steve would be, because she knows you through the church, right? So like, and like Steve will be happy to meet with him, like just creating that opportunity. I don't want her dad to be there going, he's having all these thoughts in his head and they're having conversations and they don't know who to ask, you know, like just making that available. So I use your office as like making it available. Now, they didn't do that for him. I think he was someone who totally went the other way in his in his heart, but at least I would hate to think that he was having those questions and she knows me and they don't know who to turn to.
I think one, my only caution in all this conversation would be like, and I say it from my own life in the sense of not judging others, but recognizing I see this quality in my own life sometimes. Sometimes we hide fear under the auspices of not wanting to be preachy or overbearing or social norms. And so while on one hand I completely agree with what Steve said, that our heart has to be geared towards not meeting our desire to solely preach at someone, but to come in with love and compassion and service, not just look for opportunity or wait for opportunity, but take the opportunity to find a way to share Jesus with someone at any point in your life, but especially in their last days, because it may be the most important conversation they have ever had. But I know so many of us, myself included, sometimes get afraid. Yeah. Like, there's no other way to put it. We get afraid. What are people going to think? What if this person rejects me? And it becomes very me-centered. And so we hide that fear under the, well, you know, I wanted to be gentle. It's lifestyle evangelism. I'm trying to take up the, you know, preach the gospel at all times. When necessary, use words.
Mm-hmm. Worst phrase ever. It's
been crazy.
On one hand, I'm like, it's a great motive, but like the idea is, why can't make it both ends? Preach the gospel with your life and with your words. Like, let's do that.
That's the key, is like, if you go in with one and not the other, neither works, right?
Right.
So you, if you go in and you're like, oh unless my goodness, preacher, you might be gone next week, so I have to go in and like, and tell you how much you're ignorant and you're going to go to hell. Right, but if you have relationship, but like I think you said, you can't let fear hold you back from loving them and having conversations and being. And that's why I feel like in our lives at all times it says be ready to give account for the faith that you have. And that fear, like we said before, it could be in this situation. But how many countless times have I had conversations with other people, and nothing to do around dying, but we're afraid to say what we believe.
And I think you'd be surprised. I think you would be surprised sometimes when you open that door with someone you care about that you've loved, or even that maybe you just are meeting. when you open that door to say, and it's come from the right place, where I want to share something with you that's important in my life, and it's given me hope.
Mm-hmm. You go with hope.
Yeah, and you'll be really surprised sometimes at the response you get. Because I think in our heads, we think we're going to get the, you know, the get out of here, like, I don't want to hear your garbage, don't bring me that sing-songy Jesus garbage. Like, this attitude, whereas I actually think... I noticed even from high school students, like, you know, I was talking to a high school kid last week who, you know, so obviously enjoys marijuana and all these other avenues. And I just asked him one question. I can't even remember what it was. Like, tell me about your background. Like, tell me where you come from. And he just went on this, and I asked him, like, he went on this rampage about, like, religious history. And I said, well, like, do you know Jesus? Like, do you follow Jesus? And he's like, no. And then, like, we ended up having this great conversation all out of, like, one simple question. And he would have been, like, if I had to, like, profile him, I would have been like, maybe not a good place to start. Like,
you can't make assumptions about people. You can't, out of your fear, you can't make assumptions about people. But if you, people also know when you are having those conversations out of love and or out of just because you feel like you're right about something. And people, like, if they feel that you're going in just because you have something, you're right, then they're not receptive to that. Yeah. But if they know that you love them...
I mean, I'm right a lot, so that can be a problem sometimes, but I'm just kidding.
There you go. So, anyway,
and the thing we have to ask, all of us have to ask ourselves, especially if someone's dying, mm-hmm. They know I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
Am I giving a false comfort in the way I've talked? Like, mm-hmm. by going, oh, God loves you, it'll be okay.
You're going to be going to heaven.
In my words, and what I've communicated, have I given them, well, the Christian thinks it's okay. Like, have I given a false comfort? And we'll be responsible for that.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Dude, I was at a funeral.
Like, not just saying, but actually, have you told them, have you given the impression, oh, the Christian thinks I'm good to go?
Yeah.
That's,
you know what? I was at a funeral. It was... I was at a funeral 18 years ago. A good friend of mine from high school whose mom died, she had gotten cancer, a kid I grew up with, lived down the street, and a couple of us, this is in college, but we got together, like, and said, you know, let's go to her funeral and support Chris, was the guy's name. And I sat there, and it was a Catholic funeral kind of setting, and listening to the priest talk about Chris's mom, who I knew for a fact was not a believer, but preached to this congregation that she was in heaven and that she was with Jesus, and on account of her good life and her moral high ground, and just sitting there feeling like wanting to get up and not yell in the funeral and say, no, she's in hell.
That
would have been terrible, but like just feeling such grief for this family that he's lying to them to make them feel better and give them some sense of like glaze over the void of, you know, the loss of their mom and wife. And it was just like, I just remember being so angry, not because he was being a heretic. Well, on one hand, I was angry for that, but just for my friend and his family going like this false comfort, this unfair kind of assessment that this man who doesn't know or made on her life based on what his family told them, her family told him.
Because he wants to be popular and liked.
Yeah, because, like, I mean...
He wants to comfort and help people.
Yeah, Steve and I are never going to go to a funeral and be like, well, this is Tom. Tom is burning in hell because he was unrepentant. Don't be like Tom. Like, that's never going to be a message we're going to preach. And that's never how we want to present the gospel. We don't want to. That's the other thing I think is so important is that, like, we don't want to ignore hell, but we also don't want to preach the gospel as a avoidance
fire
of hell.
Yeah,
yeah, like fire church. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, like, we want to preach the gospel because it gives life, not because it saves eternal death.
So that was your next question, right? Like, what do you say to someone who this person has died? Joe has died. What do you say to Joe's family? And Joe's not a believer.
Mm-hmm. I've wondered that with the same friend that we talked about. Yeah. You know, it was one thing with her dad, but she has several children. And I thought to myself, I'm like, what if even she became a believer, but one of her children passed? right? Like, what, how would I even, how would I even go there with her? I wanted that. Yeah.
So, like, when I do funerals, I just don't talk about it because I don't think anything can be gained. That person is dead. Mm-hmm. We can't save them now.
Yeah.
The other thing is I don't know mm-hmm. because on both sides, maybe that person really was repentant towards the end. Maybe God showed mercy and opened their hearts in such a way. I don't know that for sure, but I don't want to give false hope and say maybe. I don't talk about that, but it's true. They might actually have, God might have broken through and shown grace at the end. I also know if someone's professed to be a Christian, there'll be some people that said, Lord, Lord, mm-hmm. and aren't in the kingdom. So I can't know for certain what anyone's eternal destiny is. It's not my place. I can have a good clue. And more so if I see someone who's, I just seen evidence of their very love for true. Jesus yeah. over years, I go, I'm quite confident that this person, well, I have great certainty. But if it's someone I didn't know or they're an unbeliever, I don't know. I'm not going to talk about how I don't know and like make it give a kind of a hopeful uncertainty. We don't know. Maybe God, I don't want to do that either. I just go, it's too late for them. So I'm not going to talk about that person if they're an unbeliever. What I'm going to talk about is death and the opportunity. Like at a funeral, this is no longer about that person and judging them and trying to evaluate where are they. This is all about the 200 people in the room that are thinking about death, that never think about death and are asking themselves, am I right with God? We're sitting in a church thinking about death. So that's what I talk about is the gospel and talk about, you know, I don't know what happened to Joe, but I know what the Bible says about death, and I know what the Bible, where the Bible offers hope, and that there is resurrection life, life with God, forgiveness of sins for those who believe in Jesus. So I don't know where you're at. I don't know where Joe is at, but the opportunity here is to enter resurrection life. And I mean, to lovingly, graciously, like it just, there's nothing to be gained by damning Joe.
Yeah.
When really it's not my position, nor do I actually have that knowledge. But what we can do is talk to people that are hurting with grace because mm-hmm. they're hurting and wounded and uncertain and present the Christian hope of resurrection. It's I don't know what's happened with Joe, but there's opportunity for us still. Mm-hmm. How are we going to live?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I often preach Psalm 23.
The Lord is my shepherd.
Which people want, like they ask.
No, non-Christians. Which one?
Yeah, it's well, after 22.
Yeah, I know.
But non-believers always ask for Psalm 23.
Mocking you, Rhoda, not our listeners. Just for the record, I was mocking Rhoda, not our listeners. I value you. I value Rhoda. But
and we talk
see,
about the
Tyler
life.
When Tyler got a job, did you include a raise for me in that contract when you took Tyler?
Stress pay?
Yeah.
He told me he was going to fire you.
April that Fools. Was
a good
okay,
yeah.
Okay, sorry, we're totally disrupting Steve's
sorry,
answer.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Okay.
Go for it. You remember
anyway, yeah, so I think people are thinking about death, and we got to make the most of the opportunity.
Well, and that kind of leads a little bit into kind of a two-part question in there, because we're like, okay, someone has passed, and we don't know their family member saved. And then someone's passed, and we believe that their family member was saved, and how do you have... And I think for people who... Because she said, you know, like, shouldn't we be rejoicing that they're with Jesus? But how do you combine that? And I think you alluded to is like that person, yes, we find comfort in that. If you're a believer, then you find that can be your comfort to think, you know, like you said, we don't totally know, but if there's strong indications in that, we can find comfort in that. But really, when you're trying to comfort someone, Christian or not Christian, who's lost someone, the loss is theirs in their life. Yeah. They're the ones who have to go forward in their life. So you can still be comforting to them because they've still experienced the loss in the now.
Yeah.
Right?
So we have a theological answer, but there's no funeral or a person who's experiencing loss conversations. This is not the opportunity for trite answers, sort of like, smarten up, Rhoda. Don't you know the resurrection? You shouldn't be sad.
Yeah.
Your whatever is going to be raised in the end. Don't,
yeah.
It's true. And I think that, but... there's still loss.
Yeah.
You're not actually, when we go to a Christian funeral memorial, we celebrate because we have certainty of hope of the resurrection and life to come and forgiveness of sins.
Yeah.
But we're also mourning the loss, not like this person's gone to hell, but the loss that we mourn at a funeral is just the loss of a friend.
Mm-hmm.
They were in my life every day and now they're not. And that's still sad. Like just like you're sad when your kids go off to college.
Yeah.
Just because they're going to a better place, as we like to say, doesn't mean it still hurts that they go. Like you, yeah. your daughter can go off to college and got a great scholarship to a good school. You're so proud of them and so happy for them, but you still miss them. Mm-hmm. You can be both celebrating where
you're
they've
still
gone.
Grieving that.
Yeah, it's still hard to see your little girl going off to, because so it, both things can be true. We don't need to guilt people for like, why are you being sad? Don't you know the resurrection? Where's your faith? Like, well, you can be mourning the loss of a friend and rejoicing at what God has done in forgiving.
Like, look, like I always go, like, look at Jesus. He wept over his friend Lazarus, and then raised him from the dead. Like,
10 minutes later.
Like, yeah. So, like, there's this level of like, and it's not like he's God, so he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But he's still grief stricken. But yeah, like I think it's important to go, like, you know, where there's opportunity to provide comfort.
Yes.
When there's opportunity to provide, preach the gospel. And there's always kind of opportunity for both. And that's where you have to dig. It's just, it's a matter of being smart, maybe is not the right word, but maybe tactful and just picking your spots, but not shying away. And yeah, like when someone dies, like that, we need to address, I think we need to address the facts that we have to be able to love them. And, you know, like if Steve got hit by a bus tomorrow, I could tell his friends and family Steve knew Jesus. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. And I could provide them with real comfort in that his eternal destiny is sealed, but we can still acknowledge it. We love him and miss him or whatever. But if I don't know that person, I might not lead with that because I don't know. And the reality is like, I think we can also, if someone asks, point out that, you know, it is God alone who judges. It's not to me. So, you know.
But don't overplay that card either.
No,
I mean, I've
yeah.
been saying that because yeah. some people will overplay that card and go, only God knows and God is gracious and loving. Like, wait.
No, he is. Sorry, I wasn't laughing at that.
We have more revelation than that.
Yeah.
We also know the measure by which he will judge. And it is namely, do you have faith in Christ? Do you accept the gift of salvation that's offered in Jesus, his death in your place, or are you trusting in your own righteousness? So we know that God judges, but we also know how he judges.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point.
So like you can, I'm trying to find this balance of like
yeah.
not overplaying that card that's
yeah.
like only God knows. Yeah, okay, but I actually have a good guess.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to just like rub it in people's faces or be like, God hates sinners like the Westboro Church. Like, we're not celebrating the death of anyone. We're not celebrating judgment. Judgment is hard.
Yeah, that drives me crazy when people go, oh, they deserve that because God's giving you this judgment. I'm like, what? You do not know God. Like, you know, like you do, you just want, you're happy. And when people rejoice in the judgment of others, there's something very...
God doesn't rejoice in the death of sinners.
Yeah. So
Though he judges
yeah.
as the just and righteous
child. Well, that'd be different. Like, if you have a parent who disciplines their children because they love them and because it's their responsibility and it's right, but they don't delight in it, versus parents who delight in...
Yeah, it's not like mom and dad are like, high five, I just beat our child with a belt because they did something.
Yeah.
No. I've seen my older brother have to spank his daughter and then come back into the room almost in tears, like hating it, but needing to discipline his child.
Well, those are good questions.
Let's talk about spanking.
No,
I'm just kidding.
I'll put that on
another. Is it send in your questions.
Yeah.
So send in your questions. Thank you for the person who sent this in. And we do have other questions on file that we don't have time for today, but we have not forgotten them. Tune in next week.
Can you give us a teaser?
Yeah. The question for next week is, can you sin in your dreams? Dun, dun, dun. We had an interesting discussion about that before the podcast. We'll see where we land next week when we do the podcast.
Yeah. Depends the kinds of dreams I have this week.
All right. So, a couple of upcoming things. Garage sale this weekend for Cambodia Team Fundraiser. Bring your stuff in through Friday and come and shop and buy it back on Saturday.
But don't just like dump it in the kitchen.
So... But please bring it in the nursery. We do have, actually, yes, if you're bringing stuff in, bring it in the nursery or ask staff.
During office
hours.
The
facility gets used a lot by different groups. So just because if you don't see a group in an area doesn't mean it's not going to be used. So
just like piles of stuff in the sanctuary. Like,
yeah. No. Just bring it in. We'll be happy to show you and say thank you so much. And just thank you for your support.
Mm-hmm.
And come shop. And
potluck.
Help us move it back up. Oh, and potluck on Sunday. After church, And if you're someone going, I don't want to do potlucks, just try. You might like it. You might meet someone interesting. You might have a good conversation. And
get to the food table early.
And you can also, you might be there at a table. You might be, because you're there talking to someone, you might be loving someone else. Help them out. So come on out. Potluck. Join in the community. And that's about it. Send in your questions.
Did you get enough chocolate today?
Maybe. It's early. Anyway, have a good day. Thanks for joining us.